Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Look, I don't want to waste your time too much with this, but God, you can get Magma, our engineering presentation, at sospresents.com. I'm not going to tell you again that it's at sospresents.com.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank.
The show where we come up with 5 sketch ideas. I'm Alistair.
And I'm Andy George William Tremblay Birchall. G'day, mate.
G'day to all of you. And you know, I was petting my alligator the other day.
Okay.
Because even an alligator with no emotions needs love.
Yes.
Although, did you see that video of those guys who were getting hassled by that crocodile?
Yeah, and they're just pushing it away. Just get out of here, mate. We're being bothered.
Did you hear the backstory of it?
That he knows this alligator and it's apparently vulnerable.
No, it's not an it's not an alligator, it's a croc.
It's a crocodile.
Yeah, and it had been somehow rejected from being with the other crocs. And it was kind of needy.
Yeah, needy to feedy. That's
And I don't know if that meant that they didn't need to fear this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed like it being that close to you and then opening its mouth, that but it's like it was attacking,
yeah,
in a really self-conscious way with no confidence whatsoever.
You don't have to get into my mouth if you don't want to.
Yeah,
you know? and
if you want me to go away, I will.
That's what I want in a reptile. In a killer reptile is a little bit of humility, a little,
yeah,
low self-esteem, baby.
Well, most predators are overconfident.
Mm. Mm.
And they don't really think. They're really kind of being quite selfish and don't think about what the prey wants.
Mm-hmm. Personal space is not a big part of it. Like, it's all very well to bite into somebody, but I feel like just by going close to a victim, you're already, in a way, attacking them. Because you
that's true, yeah. The attack starts way before the attack does.
Now, I don't know how this would work, Alistair, and this may not scan and this may not be PC, strictly speaking PC, Alistair, but I reckon
we could do a
hilarious parody of sort of, you know, I'm going to say woke, I'm going to say sort of lefty stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, oh, now it's wild animals, right?
Yep.
Tigers and lions, etc. But now, before they attack the prey, they have to get its consent. You see? And it's a parody.
Sure.
Of
sex.
Oh,
sort of legal sex.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, you could apply the same kind of, you know, sort of caring about other people's feelings stuff to animal attacks and saying what's wrong with, you know, basically, I guess it would be replacing a sort of animal narrator.
Yes.
Animal documentary narrator with sort of keeping in mind either real modern things like, you know, taking up space and, you know, absolutely, you know, this one, you know, it's performing a microaggression on the antelope.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
You know, and, you know, and then absolutely, you know, and then you know, and also probably you could put some gender stuff in there if you want, you know, gosh, go for it, you know. And in terms of, you know, the roles that they're taking and how toxic it is that the male lion stays back while the females hunt.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's emotional labor as well that the the female lions have to do. Now, I think that we could do this by if we lean into it in the right way. We can do this, pull this off as a parody of the sort of the right-wing attitude to these things. You know, if we make it, because it seems like, or superficially, it's a parody of progressive politics. But if we do it in the right way, we can flip that parody around and have it the other way. Or we could just do right-wing comedy.
Because then the conservative... Sorry?
Or we could just do right-wing comedy. That's fine as well.
Well, I know, but I think if the reason why your idea is good is because the right-wing people can't tell when you're making fun of their side. and so they enjoy the comedy at face value.
So they get to have a laugh as well, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And
possibly pay us for it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. We get to feel like we're on the right side of history while still making those dirty dollars.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I've actually had... Look, this is going to be boring, I think. But I have listened to the... Who's the guy who wrote that book about with the 10,000 hours? Malcolm Gladwell. Revisionist history. Mm. And there was an episode on satire that our friend Steph brought you to ask me to listen to, and that because we were going to talk about. And he talks about sort of what is kind of good satire and bad satire in a way, and then that the kind of the good satire is kind of, I guess, stuff that was kind of like Colbert Report and probably like also like what's the other one there that's still around now? Daily Show. And things like that, because they skewer, you know, these issues and they kind of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he talks about other things that were not good. And then refers to them as kind of being ineffective and things like that. And then I think also there was the guy who wrote Four Lions. What's his name again?
Chris Morris.
He did an interview on the BBC at some point where he was talking about, you know, satire that doesn't let, you know, that doesn't let them off. Like, you know, you can...
Yeah.
That doesn't let... That, anyway, I think what all these people are forgetting is that all of that comedy, even the good, strong satire, is completely ineffective.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did a tweet to this effect recently when they were talking about... There was that story about how the BBC was going to have more right-wing comedians. And I tweeted, Alistair... that hopefully the right-wing comedians will be as effective at keeping the left-wing out of power as the left-wing comedians have been with the right.
That's good, Andy. I should go back and retweet
that. Well, thank you. In a way, I just have retweeted by forcing it upon all the listeners. I've re-speaked it. And
well, that reminds me of another tweet that I did.
Oh, yeah?
This new podcast that we do, which is Andy and Al read their tweets, which was saying that if a tweet goes well, you should be able to go on tour and take it to small theaters around the country and read it out.
Indeed. This was a tweet you did, I believe, today or possibly yesterday.
Yeah, or yesterday. And it didn't go that good, but I'm taking it on tour, baby.
A lot of solid hits, though, recently, Alistair. Like, they're not getting the massive retweet, like... things, but like we're talking good, like, you know, over 100 likes, pretty consistent, you know, scores.
Oh, sure. I'm definitely hitting over 60, you know, maybe at least on a weekly basis, Andy.
Yeah.
I'm breaking these kind of numbers. I mean, 60, that's like a classroom full of children.
With the way things are going these days, school funding, etc. 60 kids in a class. All my nightmares involve being tricked into going back to teach high school. Have I told you this? No. Every single nightmare I have, in some way, I am back teaching high school. They invite me along for some function or something, and I go like an idiot. And then when I get there, I have to teach a class, and it's always, you know, for some reason, it's all of year seven, and there's, you know, 120 kids, and I haven't prepared a lesson, and it's like it's cold sweat material. I wake up.
So let's say that does happen. Let's say that does happen, and you're tricked, right? And you're there now. You've got it's your, you know, it's an assembly sized classroom, you know, an audience that you've got. Now you are now employed because they got you there and through some technicality.
There's a
loophole.
What
can you do? What can you do now when in this class that you're going to teach within this one class to lose your job? So that you can,
I don't know, but I do have quite a funny visual in my mind of me dragging out a TV, like one of those little CRT TVs that you could all just peer at while you're in a class of 20, right, at high school. But I'm dragging it out in front of, you know, 300,000 kids at assembly down the front there. Putting on a VHS about sodium.
Of Jumanji. No.
Yeah, Jumanji. Great.
Okay, I guess if I was going to lose my job, I guess I would start, you know, low. Keep the bar low. I'd just start rubbing my nipples, both of them, with each hand.
This is the thing, though, Alastair. You want to lose your job, but you don't want to get on a list. You don't want to go to prison, right?
No, of course. No. But nipples is not erotic, is it?
Well,
they're not exposed.
As long as you're rubbing your nipples and consistently saying, "I'm feeling nothing," you know.
Yeah, but I could say, I'm not rubbing my nipples. I've got pimples here.
And okay, great. And
I'm working it up for my wife to squeeze it out later. I'm working it up.
Yeah, you massage it to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
To the brink of eruption. I'm getting it.
Now, if that doesn't, I mean, I guess obviously that's not going to, but if it's an assembly type scenario, there might be other teachers there. And that's how, you know, really, do kids get you fired or is it other teachers?
I think, you know, if there's one thing that we've been taught by hideous lessons from history, it's as long as adults don't listen to the children, you can get away with a lot of stuff for a long period of time.
Sure. So it's going to take more than the nipples.
I think, Alastair, that, you know, as long as you're rubbing your nipples and it's a non-sexual thing, you know, maybe you could prove that by taking down your trousers and exposing your clearly non-erect genitalia.
But then doesn't that put you on the list you were saying that you didn't want to be on?
Well, no, but I think that you... I don't think people can take you at your word that it's not an erotic when you're rubbing your nipples unless you also show everybody that you aren't.
But then do I say that that's also a pimple? No, that's also a pimple.
The police come, I'm sure we're going to find a sketch in this somewhere. And they look closely in front of the whole class. You're standing there and the police arrive. Still there, everyone's still watching, and the police come and they look really closely and they say, "It's okay, everyone. It is a pimple."
He's not a pervert, he's got acne.
Why are you showing everybody your pimples?
Picturing
the cops sort of hitching up those blue pants of theirs a bit and just squatting down two of them either side of you and having a real good look. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a pimple.
I guess it would help if it had a white tip.
but you know, I think you've pulled this off too effectively, and now you no longer, you're not going to lose your job, unfortunately.
Well, no, I'm not going to lose my job, so now we have to go to something else.
Yeah. I think starting a fire...
Starting a fire is really good. I mean, yeah. I think just acting really erratically.
Yes. Yes.
You know? Like, I think if you did just yell, "Baby's on fire! baby's on fire.
Mm.
Like that. And then maybe you, you banged dusters together down the aisles where the students are sitting.
Shouting consistently, baby's on fire.
Yeah.
Hmm.
No?
Well, I mean, I'm wondering where this is relevant, apart from in my dream where I'm forced to teach. You know, and I think it could be in a situation where we do have teaching is now a conscription thing.
Yeah,
right?
And you want to be able to leave. But could you just say first words out of your mouth, I am thinking of murdering you all.
Yeah. I won't.
Like, I mean, in terms of losing a job, do you think that's enough?
You know what I reckon you need to do? You need to find another teacher.
A couple of you go and tell the principal.
I think you need to find another teacher and threaten them, right? Because I think you can't...
It's not enough to threaten the children.
Well, no, I think it's too much to threaten the children. It crosses a line, but we're forgetting that there's all these adults who don't have any innocence to protect. And...
Sure.
You know, I think that's probably the safest way. You know, target the adults, target the buildings.
You mean like take an axe to the bricks?
Yeah.
Maybe try and just like knock out most of a support beam.
Is conscription teaching anything, Alistair? Is that
conscription teaching is something? I think conscription other jobs is definitely something.
That is really interesting that, you know, that there's that sort of lottery where they roll they pick out your birth date or something. Is that how they did it with the Vietnam War?
Yeah.
I picture televised at the end of the news with a big ball, and it is like the Powerball.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly how they did it, but picture
imagine that, because there would be some people who would have like a few kids.
Mm.
And on one thing, much like winning the lotto, much like there's always somebody who wins the lotto, not always, but you know, a lot of the time, in unbelievable odds, they could have five kids who are conscripted into teaching in the one night.
Yeah, and they all go off.
I guess
off.
We're not that far. Yeah. And they pack their bags and they put their, I guess they pack their apple and their sort of suspenders and
chalk.
And do they, I guess, and then they live there?
Yeah. I guess they still come home in the evenings. It's just that they have to be teachers.
Yeah, but then also when they come home, they have to do work.
It's just such
teachers,
a
eh?
Stressful job. There is so much pressure, and I really didn't like doing it.
Do you think being a music teacher would be easier?
You know what? I reckon it would be because you don't have... I was going to say there's nothing, no homework to take home to mark, but... Yeah, there probably would be.
There probably is as well.
Probably they find a way. They find a way to make you give homework.
We could have in Australia now. We're probably getting close to needing to conscript people to pick fruit because there's no backpackers to do it.
Mm. Yeah, because it's such a useless industry that nobody wants to be involved in.
Well, that farmers don't want to pay people properly.
Yeah,
and.
But you know
they want to pay you by the punnet or something.
But does that ultimately then come back to the fact that nobody wants to, pay more for fruit? Like needs to happen is we need to pay more for fruit, so that they pay more. How does the whole damn thing work? How does the whole damn system work?
It's probably that supermarkets don't want to pay more.
Right. But
and they have such a stranglehold.
But then that hasn't set up this system in the first place because there are other industries that don't have backpackers to do the work for them. Is it because when it's seasonal work like that, that, you know, there's only a fruit season for half the year. There's just nothing for these people to do for the other half of the year. So you can't have it as a career. So it's... might even be less about the amount that you get paid and more about the reality of doing it. You can't do it all year round, so you can't make a career of it. So there's just no workforce, no consistent workforce. So you have to get people in other ways. What we need is a job that only happens during the winter months, right? That when there's no fruit and nothing to be picked, we need another industry that picks up at the exact time when the fruit's all gone. And, you know, whether that be like everybody hires an umbrella holder, their own person who runs around holding their umbrella, right? And that can be what the fruit pickers do for the other half of the year. Better still, it would be something that involves the exact same physical motions, you know, that employs the skills that these people have.
Yeah, I mean, what they tend to do is they just go from one season of fruit to another type of fruit.
There's no winter fruit. Surely there's no winter fruit. Are there winter fruit?
I think there's winter fruit. We live in Australia. It's not that cold a winter, I think.
I guess there's fruit all year round.
Probably lettuce, you know? Lettuce or like cauliflower.
Vegetables. I'd forgotten about vegetables.
All the things that are in season in the winter. Pumpkins.
Winter foods, of course.
Andy, is conscription other jobs a sketch?
I think conscription other jobs is absolutely a sketch, Alistair. Yes. You know, and I think even to apply it to even in wartime, you know, imagine that you also got conscripted to be doctors or something like that. Like, you know, not that you were just being conscripted to be a maybe there's a Powerball one where you like get conscripted to be the head of the army, the major general or something like that, not just for grunt work.
Sure.
But then if your birth date is on the big golden ball, which they pull out right at the end, then you're the head of the army and you're some nobody who has to then go and do it.
But then if three people win it.
Yeah.
Which I guess there'd be a lot of people who have the same birthday, probably more than three.
All right. Well, then it's your exact birth time, which is just as important.
Sure. Which is very important, and family all know this.
Yeah.
All know them. It's funny because then it makes you think that the lottery is like being conscripted into being a rich person.
Mm. Every day, your exact birth time happens, and we never celebrate it. You know, once a year, your birthday happens, but every day, your birth time occurs, your birth second. And it would be nice just to have some micro celebration.
Micro celebration.
Is that too much?
You should have just a hat in your pocket.
Pop it on.
A party hat.
Yeah.
Pop it on.
Pop it on.
Yeah, right? You could have some carbs.
All right, Alistair. Conscription other jobs.
Yeah, Andy, we've been going real slow
today.
Real
slow, my God. Hey, here's a thing that I want to know. How can I ever, ever, ever develop a working understanding of daylight savings? All I want to know is which way it goes and when and what that means in practice for my sleep relative to my children's sleep and the clock relative to that. And I can never, ever get my head around it.
It's just one of those problems that's too... It's simple but very complex.
It seems intractable.
And it's just the mind can't get around it, and there's no point trying. It's just you just allow yourself to struggle for. Why do we need to know on that first day whether or not we've gained an hour or lost an hour? It's not. Nothing has happened really.
but I do like in the whole day beforehand. I sort of spending half my time sort of half focused on the task of trying to imagine what will happen in the morning and whether the boys will wake up, you know. And I guess the thing is that it doesn't change anything for my body clock's still the same. Their body clock is still the same. It's just that the clock has changed relative to that. And it, you know, there's a good 2-3 hours of mild background panic that I have on that preceding day. Mm-hmm. And what I want is, I guess, some sort of little thing. Maybe it would be made from wood. Maybe this is already exists in Chinese culture. I feel like it probably does. Right? And what it is, there'd be a diagram, maybe of a squirrel on one side and a dragon on the other. And there's two discs and you sort of spin them. And then there's some little lines that line up. And then there's like a proverb that
I think there just needs to be an image. It's an image that explains it so that your mind can grasp it.
Well, I guess that's what I was getting to with my two-disc squirrel dragon.
And the dragons, then there's lines, and then a wheelbarrow filled with muck, and then it drops it there, and then after it drops it, you've got more muck, but then...
Exactly.
But then on the other...
Exactly.
The wheelbarrow of muck comes and actually takes muck out of your hands and puts it in the wheelbarrow. And then obviously the muck is fed to the dragon. Just something that puts my mind at ease.
Yes, correct. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree that there's something there. Mm. But are we coming, like, what is it? I think that there's something fun in talking about this.
Right. We're having a goodish time.
Yeah.
Could there be an institute?
I really feel
for
like you just have to take it. You got to take it. Don't struggle with it, Andy. Stop trying to wrestle with it. Stop trying to understand it. It can't be grasped.
And I think that's what I tell myself every single year, but then it comes around and I panic again.
Yeah, I understand.
I just want to feel in control. And the thing is that it doesn't happen often enough for me to get to grips with it. It's always feels like a surprise. It happens in the middle of the night, you know?
Yeah. it's trying to trick you.
Exactly. You know, I think it should happen in the middle of the day, and there should be, an hour-long radio broadcast where someone with a calm voice explains to you exactly what's happening and talks you through the changing of the clock. I mean, the total alteration of our system of time shouldn't be something that happens while you're asleep. Should be done out in the open with full accountability and transparency.
We should all be forced to look at the clock while it's happening.
Exactly.
You know, your phone, everybody's phone should ring. Or maybe like one of those war sirens could happen. Okay. And then that's the sign that you've got to look at the clock. And then all the clocks. But then we would have to give government control to all our clocks.
Yeah. Maybe there should be someone who comes around. Maybe this could be something that fruit pookers do when they're not picking fruit. But they come around, like someone would come around to read your gas meter. They come around to check your clock, right? And there's a person in every house in the country, an employee in every house in the country for the changing of the clock. And they're there for a full hour as well as this takes place. And they can answer all your questions about daylight savings.
They're there for the whole hour that you either gain or lose.
Exactly. And to talk you down. Whenever the panic starts to rise again, they can answer your questions. They've got a very impressive uniform, as befits a Time Lord, which is basically what they are.
Of course, yeah.
They've got a big bear keeper hat. Or beef eater. What are those big hats they wear at the Tower of London?
Sure.
Big fluffy hat. One of those.
That's not the Tower of London, I don't think. The big fluffy hats. I think those ones those are kind of like big tall hats, beef eater ones.
Right.
Not the fluffy ones, though.
I want the fluffy one. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And maybe there's a clock in it.
I think beef eaters have a hat. Let me see. Just beef eater hat. Oh, maybe that is a beef eater. But no, I thought the beef eater was the silly one. Yeah, you're thinking of the British Royal Guard.
Right, the BRG. Booth Raider Ginsburg.
My wife's dad was a British Royal Guard.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my cousin was a footman to the Queen. One of her butlers rode on the back of the carriage.
I think my grandfather's real dad, he cared for horses for one of the princes and would go riding with him, or king or something.
Really? Apparently that's what you've got to do if you want to have sex with Queen Victoria.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe he did.
Oh.
Well, he had an illegitimate child with his I think the lady who took the care of his children, and that's LSD. Where my grandfather came from.
Are you the rightful heir to the throne?
I asked my dad. He's talked to one of that guy's children or grandchildren, and she doesn't seem to think that there's much money.
It's a shame.
But she does live in Cyprus now, and I don't know if that's a thing you do when you have lots of money, but I saw a photo of some schnitzel there, and it was very big.
I think we've talked about the size of the Cypriot schnitzel on the show before. I could be wrong, but I feel like the topic of enormous schnitzels is one that we have discussed. And yeah.
I think in Europe, it's more of a sign of status to have big schnitzel.
Mm.
Mm. Whereas here, I think the schnitzel that they make is kind of, you know, relatively, you know, it's made so that it can sort of fit on a plate and have other things on there as well.
Yeah.
And so you can see that class is less of an issue here, I think.
Well, that's interesting because I also think of Australian food, you know, much like the country, as being, you know, large. You know, that because we have more space, we have larger portions over here. I imagine in Cyprus, being an island, you know, space is limited, and you probably evolve to have smaller plates and smaller meals so that you're not banging your elbows against each other as you gather around the table.
It's interesting that that's your theory, because I think my theory is the opposite. I think that we don't have that big a portion here. They're not served that big. And I think that maybe on a small, and that's maybe because we are such a big island, and we have nothing to prove. Whereas in Cyprus,
yes,
they are a very small island, and they need to show off how big they are, and they do that by smashing down their pork or chicken very flat so that it's very wide.
These are both really good theories about a very interesting and important issue. And I'm glad that we're getting all this out there.
I think that there's a paper that could be written. And I know a paper is not quite a sketch, but a sketch can start out as a paper.
There you go.
And it could be the relationship between schnitzel, the average schnitzel size in a country.
Yes.
And, you know, a country's, you know, self-worth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The esteem to portion ratio. There are.
That's right.
I know that you can get examples of both island dwarfism and island gigantism in animals. For example, on the island of Flores, that's where the Homo floriensis, was the little hobbit people, that species of hominids that were very small. But then, on whatever that island is where you get the Komodo dragon, possibly Komodo Island, they are very, very big. It can go either way.
Mm.
And so it is with schnitzel.
And so it is.
Mm. Anyway.
So I don't know. Is there a sketch in that?
Was there anything?
We'll call this episode Dead Ends.
Was there anything in the daylight savings thing?
Well, look, I wrote down daylight saving understanding.
Yeah.
And I think it could just be somebody, it's daylight savings again, and they're struggling to remember what that means.
No, right? I think it's the people who come around to your house and spend the full hour there with you, talking you through it, and have a big uniform.
Oh, yeah, there's the spend the hour.
I think that's got to be it.
But could it be that it's a person struggling with it, and so we get to see the struggle, and then we get to see this transformation as a new solution comes out.
Mm. And do we get to see the stress fall from their shoulders? Maybe some of their hair grows back.
Yes. On their shoulders. Very, they become very hairy.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All their hair grows back. Even that little peach fuzz that, you know, is on you when you're a baby.
I mean, has...
A baby peach.
And were there all these theories about why human beings don't have hair all over their bodies like other apes? Has anybody examined the idea that it could be stress? That it's all just fallen off because of the complicated lives that we lead that begin in the womb?
That would make sense. And then you could sort of work backwards and figure out actually which ones are the calmest animals by which ones are the hairiest ones.
Mm.
I would say maybe the yak would be the calmest.
They seem calm.
Yeah.
They seem calm.
And
yeah.
The woolly mammoth would have been very calm, and that would explain why maybe they're all gone.
Yes.
They're too calm to fight, you know, and then probably the giant sloth. That sounds like it probably would have been a calm animal, as we know the sloth itself is quite calm. That giant sloth that would have been wiped out when humans arrived in South America.
Unless the reason that they move slowly is because they're paralyzed by stress.
No. That's the opposite. They're very hairy because they're calm. Mm.
Yes.
And it's the stressed animals that have no hair.
I was just for no reason proposing an alternative theory that adds nothing and quite possibly stymies your attempt to go anywhere with this idea, Alistair. Come on.
Well, I mean, I did a similar thing by telling you your theory about schnitzels was wrong. And by proposing the opposite thing. So maybe you thought that this is some new format that we have.
Yeah, I guess so.
Where we come in and then we say to the person, yes, and agree. And then we say, but the opposite of your idea.
Yeah. What if it was the opposite? What if an alternative that also isn't funny? What if that?
Yeah.
What if nothing? What if silence?
Well, Andy, I don't know. Like mine, I mean, obviously mine wasn't funny in a ha-ha way or even in a quiet way where you kind of just acknowledge that it's funny to yourself.
Mm.
But, you know, maybe. I mean, what other hairless animals are there? Fish?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. Fish, whales, the elephant. Whales,
but they kind of have hair in their mouth, don't they?
No, they don't. No.
Baleen. Baleen, isn't that just inner hair?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that's weird teeth. I think what you're describing there is just real messed up weird teeth. I mean, it's a bit hair-like, but it's still made from essentially tooth material.
Yeah, but then I think once you look back at like the evolution of certain things, then you go like actually like teeth might have started as scales or something like that, and then it's just some scales that moved in.
Yeah, you're right. There is going to be and hair probably also came from scales as well. So either way, there's an uncomfortable middle period in which yes, you either have scales or hair. In your mouth. You can't get away from that. Can't erase that from history. The missing links,
and
maybe we should stop looking for them because...
Yeah, they're disgusting.
They're probably going to be horrible.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But what about somebody who's born and they are, for some reason, they've awoken... their missing link gene.
No.
And instead of teeth, they have hair in their mouth.
Oh, my God. So all around the gum, there is a fringe of hair. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It kind of just falls, like, you know, it goes kind of straight down, but the longer it gets, and goes also straight up.
Mm.
But the longer it gets, I guess, the more floppy and paintbrush-like it is.
Mm.
And then eventually it's very long if you don't cut it.
Now, I think it's quite like head hair. But it could be more fuzzy, like beard hair or something like that. But I also don't feel good about this being something that you have from birth, because then we've got to inflict this on a baby and then a child, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Well, no, yeah.
I feel much better about you have your baby hair metamorphosis thing where, somebody wakes up one day and they have hair teeth.
Maybe. Yeah, but babies aren't born with their teeth either.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Yeah. You know, so it's, like 6 months in or something like that, they start kind of growing teeth. And they would start growing their hair.
If you did have this,
yeah,
hair gums, how would you try and deal with that? I wonder if you could get some kind of a product, some kind of a gel or something like that.
Mm.
So you could style your teeth into or your hair into a kind of a ridge-like, teethy kind of thing.
Maybe if you kind of used a wax to wax them down to a point, kind of like the Beckham used to do on the top of his head. Sort of have that triangular peak.
Yeah.
But downwards like that, you might be able to, depending on, you might have to use something stronger than a wax, maybe like an epoxy resin or something like that. And then sort of, I guess, just cure it with like UV light in your thing. I think I've seen people wear UV light in their mouths for teeth whitening or something like that.
Perfect. Yeah.
Well, you use that to harden your teeth, and you could just, obviously it'll work until the hair grows out a bit more, and then that root will be pretty floppy.
I suppose to get basic with you, you could just shave it and then wear false teeth, but that's really...
Yeah, or you could shave it and...
Wear a wig.
Sort of wear false hair in there that is like, it looks like hair, but it's much more rigid. It's a thicker bristle.
This hasn't been done, as far as I'm aware, in a horror movie. I mean, my familiarity with horror movies is limited in that I haven't seen almost any of them because I'm too scared because of the name of the movie.
Because of movie.
Movie. That makes me uncomfortable.
Because you don't like motion.
That's right.
I find that terrifying.
But it seems like something that would be like, you imagine somebody turns around, right?
Yeah.
In a movie, in a horror movie. They open their mouth, out all this hair falls. Terrifying.
But like long hair that's long maybe hair. Braided or dreadlocks.
I imagine it quite straight. Quite straight. But dreadlocks, oh my God. Awful.
Well, because if it's just kind of like mushing together from when you chew and stuff like that, I guess you'd always be chewing on your hair a little bit.
Yeah.
You'd probably then cough up hair. And maybe at some point it would be so tangled that you wouldn't be able to kind of like completely open your mouth. And you'd probably have to just like, sort of throw a spoonful of soup in through the hair.
Well, then you can get a knife and you can just slice across.
Yeah, once it gets... Too much, but you don't want to be putting a knife,
all
sharp
the
knife
time.
Too much
You're
into
right.
your mouth.
Yeah, sometimes you just throw some soup.
Just throw some soup in there. You could probably like just push kernels of corn through the gaps in the hair and things like that. You'd probably then also get a bit of sustenance from all the hair you eat. I assume the body can digest it or maybe you'd have hairballs.
Am I right that ice creams are the only food that we lick? Ice creams and icy poles?
Is it lollipops?
Lollipops and toffee apples.
Any food that you want to claim as your own?
Yes, true. True.
So you could do that to a steak. You could
I'm just thinking there are no savory lickables. Is that right?
I mean,
there's no licking cheese.
They should make a licking stick. Yeah, like a licking steak or a licking cheese.
Yeah. I think, like a kind of like a camembert type thing is sort of approaching the kind of consistency where you could lick it like an ice cream. Have it on a stick.
Savories. Or like even a licking soup, Like a soup pop.
Yeah, so it's thicker, so it is a kind of an ice cream thickness, You know, that, you know, we know we can get that consistency with like a mashed potato or something like that. So why not a mashed potato in a cone that's lickable?
Soup, yeah.
Or a lickable soup.
But I think you can't just have it thick. I think it needs to be like, it's got to be like a congealing or something like that, so that it still kind of keeps some of its liquidiness, like if you're making a soup.
Yeah, if you're going to be able to be licking it off.
Because let's say you were making a licking steak.
Yeah.
The trouble, I guess, is that the fibers in it are too
fibrous,
solid.
Yeah.
In order to sort of break off bits I suppose there's some erosion that occurs when you lick a steak, but I think probably licking a steak to completion would probably take months, if not, you know, if not longer.
Correct. And
unless
we enhance the tongue, you know.
Well, that's true. We could embladen it.
Yeah. So, you know, that thing that you use for cutting the zest off a lemon, that's like a little, like a tiny little grater thing that has just a series of little holes along the end there on a bent bit of metal. You get one of those, you attach that to the end of the tongue. And what I'm picturing here is that the tongue, when you're young, they cut a little hole in it, right? And they put in one of those sort of Apple-style maglock magnets, neodyne magnet or something like that.
Yeah,
now you can get attachments for the tongue, okay,
great, to enhance. I think you need a few of those. You need like maybe two at the back and one at the tip.
Sure, sure. To hold whatever it is, you know, relatively place, rigid relative to the tongue. Yes.
But then you'd also need a metal plate on the top palate so that whatever blades you're putting in your mouth aren't cutting up your gums at the top.
Well, I think you only keep it on while you're eating, and you know, like we learn how to not bite the fork when we're putting a fork in our mouth, you'd learn not to slice your own mouth.
No,
with
but
the...
Think about this. Okay, let's say you've got a steak on a stick.
Yeah.
Right?
It's even, so you've got, you know, you're using, maybe you're holding the bone.
Maybe, yeah. But I think it'd be nice if, you can go to a vendor, you know, he's got a nice stick. Maybe it's a waffle stick, you know.
Sure.
You can pay extra for waffle, you know. And then he's just, you know, he's maybe curled it into a ball for you, right? And then, so now you've got your grater tongue.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you run it along it, like that, and then all those little bits of steak are now stuck in the little holes in the blade, right? Inside the grater that's on your tongue.
Yeah.
And they're now underneath the grater, which is now, so they're stuck between the grater
and
your tongue. So then as you bring it in, now you've got to suck backwards in order to get those chunks out of there, and that sucking pressure reduces the amount of space in your mouth, which then pushes
the tongue against the
blade bits up against your roof.
That's what you're saying.
And in order to get enough suction to move meat, you're probably going to have to completely evacuate that mouth cavity. And increase pressure so that's going to be a lot of pressure of blade onto top palate.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of effort to avoid using the teeth, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, here we are, finally working out a way for the mouth to cut meat.
Yeah. But, you know, this is what it takes for evolutions in food. Sometimes it takes evolutions in mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that we're making the tongue more versatile. And it's crazy to me that before, you know, that we're thinking about putting a computer chip in the human brain before we've even put a single magnet in the human tongue.
Yeah, before we've put a single blade on the human tongue.
Mm.
It seems insane.
Think
about this. You could have one of those egg slicers?
Yeah.
You know those things?
All the blades.
It's sort of
the
like,
wires,
you know, some blades that go up and some blades that go down?
Yep.
Well, you put some of those blades on your tongue, some of the blades on the roof, on your palate, And then you just put a whole egg in your mouth, a boiled egg, like that. And you just one bite down and it's, you know, in six pieces.
And
I guess you could just, you could toss one each one back at a time into the throat without even needing to sort of use your teeth.
Yeah.
Because an egg is, you know, it probably doesn't really need to be chewed.
You know, and we're not teaching you how to suck eggs, but
no.
We will have to. After you get this equipment installed.
Yeah, suck egg pieces.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, that's a different... That's, of course, you got to teach somebody how to do that.
Yeah. But that egg's been shelled.
Do people suck eggs? Does anybody suck eggs? When... I mean, this is an expression, right? I'm not teaching your grandma to suck eggs, or...
Yeah. I'll teach your grandma to suck eggs now. Yeah.
What?
I think so.
Why would she be? Is she sucking raw eggs through a straw? Is she a bodybuilder? Or is...
I think it's a nice, it's a good snack. I think once you get around this idea that, you know, you shouldn't eat raw egg.
Yeah. This idea.
Then suddenly, like, I mean, people have raw eggs in smoothies and stuff all the time and in movies and stuff.
Yep. Yep. And you eat...
I think there's no reason why you can't... You can't just go to work, you know, on a work site or something like that with just a skewer and a dozen eggs, you know, and just pop two holes, one in the top, one in the bottom, and then just...
So
that
you are on a work site, chewing. And where do you have these sort of raw eggs? Do you just have them loose in your pockets?
Yeah, I guess you could have them loose in your pockets, or you can have them in, you know, it's like it doesn't matter. You can sit it anywhere. Sit it under a bench. Just bring... I mean, you don't have to have a basket. You can just bring the carton.
And just bring smash the carton. A cool dozen at at lunch.
You know, and if you're hungry, an 18-pack.
Yep. I love it.
And if the flavor is of any problems, just have it with some gum.
Oh, that's really hit home for me, Al. That is something.
Yeah, you know, just, you know, have gum either before, have it already in your mouth as you're sucking it in there and just kind of like that and swallow everything but the gum.
Yeah.
Or just save up a nice piece for when you're done, you know, sucking your day's eggs.
We spend a lot of time trying to make food taste better and no time at all trying to make our tongue taste less. You know, why not a little tongue condom that if you're going to eat or drink something that you know is going to be unpleasant, or you don't even want to have to factor that in.
Yeah.
You know, that you just gag that tongue, you mask the tongue with a little what's it, and that's no longer an issue. Think of all the time save in the day. You can now eat anything.
And think about the, you know, like a problem that people mention regarding, say, condoms is that you can't feel as much.
Mm.
Well, that's the same scenario here with this tongue covering, but it's an added benefit.
That's the,
you know,
that's a
it allows
freebie.
You to have an egg, you know, and not have to enjoy any of the sensation.
Yep. Not have to endure.
And it's a bonus. I think people are putting their condoms on the wrong part of their body.
There you go. And you could call it the taste bud.
The taste friend.
Yeah, that's better. Good.
Taste buddy? I mean, taste bud is really good.
No, but taste friend, that's, you've really got something there with that one.
but then the suggestion is what? That the taste is like, he's your taste friend, but he's the one who does all the tasting for you?
All right.
Because it makes it, or does the sock itself, does the rubber sock that you put on your tongue... itself have a taste. I guess just a taste that you want. And a texture. You could have it ribbed on the inside.
Yeah,
with a
and
texture
flavored.
That you like.
So you
for
get
your tongue.
A flavored condom. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You turn it a ribbed flavored condom, you turn that inside out, you put that over your tongue. Now you mm-hmm. can eat anything and you're enjoying the flavor and the texture that you love, which is
yeah.
boysenberry delight and rib.
Yeah. Yeah, and what?
Rib. You love the texture rib, so of rib.
Of like a rib?
I guess, yes.
Like a single rib? Just like a like the bone? One bone?
Are you okay, so this is a ribbed condom that tastes like ribs.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the taste of, you know, I love the taste of ribs, but I think you want a nice texture. Something like, I mean, look, I agree. Maybe, I mean, if it's rib, if you're tasting, I guess, the texture of the meat on the rib, you know, it's probably been slow cooked and things like that. Yeah, I think that's a really pleasant texture, but then it's still got some rigidity with, because you're probably still also feeling the bone in there. And then that extra structure would really help protect you from the sensation of the egg you're actually drinking.
Yes. Everything now tastes and feels like ribs. What have we got out of this, Alistair?
We actually do have some things. I think there's a few things that I've written down at the beginning that don't feel like they're quite ideas, but I think we really started getting into ideas. I think once we mentioned hair teeth. So I think we have enough. I'll take us. I don't know if you know this, but there's a section where we get three words from a listener.
I'm intrigued.
Who is on our Patreon? Who by donating $3, they can get three words said out loud. Well, by us and their name. And thank you to everybody who does this. And I'm sorry we don't get to everybody just yet. I mean, we have been getting to a lot of people, but I mean, there's a lot of people who have resubmitted words that we haven't got back to for a bit. And so I'm sorry for just the wait, you know, that everybody's having to go through.
I'm sorry too.
But
maybe that
today's
makes
words
it better.
Today's words are from Timothy. No last name.
Hi, Timothy.
Timothy.
It's wonderful
Hi,
to
Timothy.
Hear from you.
How are you? Oh, my goodness. What a dream. And so, Andy, do you want to guess what Timothy's first word might be?
Yeah. Grant.
Grant?
Grant.
No, but I think that that is a bit similar to one of the words in there. The first word is humorously.
Yep. Okay. Legume?
No, the second word is sexy.
Great. Humorously sexy. And I know that the last word has to be a little bit like Grant, unless you think that sexy is a bit like Grant. Maybe you know a sexy Grant.
That's very possible.
Humorously sexy earthworm.
No, man.
Right. Humorously.
Which is a bit like Grant.
Sexy. Man. Yeah. I mean, isn't it interesting that so many comedians are uncomfortable with the idea of attractive people doing comedy? Right?
Yeah.
Like, you do feel a little bit suspicious. And I think what we're realizing is that there's nothing that's sexy that we can have that sexy people can't take away. And it. As the all the traditional sexy jobs get filled, sexy acting, sexy fireman, and of course, sexy
worker,
whale biologist.
Yeah,
you're left only. You know, they start to overflow and occupy other niches in the ecosystem.
Well, there's people who are just professionally sexy.
That's true. Yes,
you know. And then there's sexy people in jobs in sort of that are kind of like normal jobs, you know, because that's when they move out of that as there's no more room in the sexy, just being sexy industry.
Correct.
But then there's also, a job that's quite, it feels like comedy is unsexy because you're debasing yourself a lot. But then sexy people do come in and then they take over because then people want to give them opportunities. Because people go, well, even if it's not funny, I'm experiencing sexiness.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no, I mean, it's interesting, isn't there? There's no sort of circuit for you to try out being sexy, to work out how to get better at being sexy. You really do have to just learn that on the job, sort of in your everyday life, right?
And everyday life is a job.
Every day. Well, when it comes to being sexy, it's something that you develop, in the school of hard knocks, on the street.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is that you have to look in the mirror and do things that are sexy. And that means that you have to look at yourself and do a move and then go, that was sexy because I was a little bit aroused.
Yes. Right. And then you refine that. So, you can work it out at home and then, I guess, try it in your everyday. But I mean, I'm picturing, I guess, a sort of an open mic sexy circuit where you can go and stand on stage in front of a group of people, not with a microphone, but just with a bit of space and a few eyeballs, and
maybe a magnifying glass.
Try some ways, things that you've been thinking of that might be sexy. And people can, react.
I went to, I've rarely done this in my life, but I went to a strip club once.
Yes.
And it really felt like the first few acts were open mic. Where it's like, this person is still learning.
Yeah.
And they're definitely trying to get better. But for me, I think to think of somebody, like, it's strange that the magnifying glass isn't used in sexiness, like in strip clubs and things like that, because you would think that there's all these parts of your body that are sexy.
Yeah.
And what people find sexy is getting to see them.
Yeah. But then you'll also notice, Alistair, that a lot of the time...
But once you take off your clothes, you can't show them anymore.
Right.
Unless you have a magnifying glass. back when I was a stripper myself, people used to think, I used to tell them I had a magnifying glass and people would think, that I was saying that because I had a tiny penis. But no.
No.
It's just that I had a bigger penis when it was magnified.
And
everybody likes seeing a big penis.
Well, but even not that, it's seeing the regular penis in greater detail. Right?
That's right, yeah.
Because presumably, when you're as skilled as you, I hear, were, Alistair, on the circuit, you can, you're doing things that are more nuanced and more detailed, within the sort of the overall canvas of the penis, the work that goes on along that is better appreciated in greater detail. Like, why wouldn't you want to see those nuances?
A big part of my act then, obviously was the magnifying glass, and because having a big reveal after the big reveal. And so most people would think that once I had done the magnifying glass, that I would be done. But then, of course, I had an overhead projector, an analog overhead projector that I could then, lay some different parts on, and they'd be projected up onto the wall.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'd move quite sexily whilst my bits were sort of, squished up against those bits. But then, of course, you can get one of those microscopes as well.
That plugs into an overhead projector.
To a thing. And just imagine the details that you could
Indeed, you invite people over to maybe even look down the microscope.
Even though it's projected onto the wall?
Yeah. Well.
But then I used to do it like that before I had the projector. I used to do it like that with a regular microscope, and people would come up and they would try to get into the spirit of this strip.
Yeah.
And then they would try and fillet the microscope, and that would like mess up the lenses.
Yeah, I imagine.
They'd get hot, moist air in between the two lenses.
That's probably why you stopped doing that, offering that part of the service.
Yeah, because I'm like, no, this is not, you're just getting to have a look.
Mm.
Look with your eyes, not with your mouth.
I also think that I remember that you insisted on a very well-lit strip club. A lot of them sacrifice a lot of the detail that could be, you know, you could be putting sexy things in those detail, in that detail.
That's right.
This is like, you know, with really great comedy, you never miss an opportunity to add in an extra layer of humor. So it should be with sexiness, and that means you need to fill the room with light, and you're not just observing the thing that's in the middle of the stage. You also have stuff, sexy things going on in the background and that's the right. foreground.
Well, especially light's not just coming from above, because there's many places in the body that kind of don't really see a lot of light. And right. so therefore other people don't see them very much. And so you want some floodlights coming from up above.
Yeah.
To sort of illuminate the enshadowed bits.
Very flattering lighting, I've heard.
Yeah.
Directly above floodlights.
But then there's some darkness that can't be reached with lights that are outside of the body.
Yes.
And so that's why my final part of my show involved shining light directly out of my rear hole.
Terrific.
And that was a real light show. That was mostly it was just a laser pointer that I'd, it was just a laser pointer that I'd put in there and I could sort of squeeze. I used to get a lot of people in the eyes with that. But, I could squeeze. You know.
Just strafing the audience with the laser pointer. Yeah. Everybody's diving out of the way.
my retina!
Is this because of what I did to your microscope?
Yes and no. It was also a budget thing.
Yeah.
You could get these for about $2 at just any sort of corner store.
Well, we did it, Al.
Yeah, I think that's a sketch.
I think that's a sketch.
Taking stripping to the new level.
Oh, boy.
Well, I guess I better take us through these so-called sketch ideas for today.
If you would.
We've got woke nature doco narration and all the other problems that are going on here. Because people just focus on the feasting, but there's actually a lot of incursions into a person's personal space. And
indeed.
That have occurred way before the eating happens. Then we have conscription other job. I didn't get specific enough, but obviously it was conscription teaching was the one, but it didn't feel like it was quite.
What are you talking about?
I think, Andy, because for you teaching is horror, you feel it more. But I think to the average person, they see teaching as a
noble profession,
as a very reasonable and decent career path. And so conscription, good job.
Yeah,
is a weird idea.
I think the conscription general as well, you know, conscription head of the army is a interesting
idea.
Yeah,
and Conscription. Yeah, I get you. Conscription Pope.
There you go.
Then we got daylight savings, understanding, and solution. So then there's got all the people that come to your house and stuff like that. But I think there's got to be the build-up where it's insane and they don't understand why they don't understand
it. I don't think there has to be the build-up. I think it's just the person arrives at your door and that's the sketch kicking off.
I think if there's a place for this, for it to make lots of sense, Andy, in the context of a sketch without having to explain it, it could be part of a show in which you're providing... You're providing solutions already.
It sounds like a show right? that we would write.
And the Scandinavian Institute of Ideas,
yes,
is one of those things where you can say that in this country they do this, in this region, and they send people because nobody can understand. Obviously, you don't want me to even mention that people don't understand. You just want this thing, and. Don't even mention there's a problem.
Alistair, have you ever seen a sketch? Have you ever seen a sketch?
Do
you
know the shit will that be happens elated in sketches? That there's a solution.
Oh my god! You ever seen a Monty Python sketch? They don't when the Spanish Inquisition shows up at the door. They don't have a big build up where everybody's like, well, I wouldn't like the Spanish Inquisition to arrive today. Here are some of the details of them.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But is that a joke is the Spanish Inquisition there a solution to some problem, or is it a ridiculous thing that is only funny because it's a surprise?
Mine is also going ridiculous. To be that. Mine is also going to be that. That's why I put them in a funny hat.
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh, yeah, I forgot. That's right. It's the big furry hat. Then we've got hair teeth. Which
for Alistair is where this show gets going.
This is where this show gets going, hair teeth. For some reason, I picture a lot of people would just have that kind of crew cut hair teeth.
You got to part it short. In the middle, obviously.
What, in the middle of the tooth, like in the...
In the middle of the mouth, middle of the bottom jaw.
Are you picturing hair coming out of the top palate?
No. Don't worry about it, Al. Just around the gum.
I'm just picturing it in the kind of horseshoe shape same way.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing as well. You still part it.
Oh, I guess like where the teeth are.
Yeah.
Like at the front teeth. Oh, yeah, okay. I sort of see what you're saying. I guess you could part it, but it's dangling. I guess the down one you could... It's hard to part a dangling hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Then we got licking savories, which includes the greater tongue.
Upgrade the tongue.
Tongue upgrades. Then we've got sucking eggs as a worksite meal.
I think that the upgrading the tongue, I think we were closer with the... Oh, or is this? Have we not got to the condom on the tongue?
We haven't got there yet, Andy.
Okay.
Then we got the taste friend, and condom for your tongue.
Great.
These are all separate ideas. I mean, somebody's sucking a dozen eggs as a meal. That's a whole sketch in itself.
A thesis could be written on where we draw the line for these ideas.
Yeah, but I mean, that is a funny idea in itself, right? You can, you know, just picture it. One person, I guess, reacts about how awful it is, you know, and that,
that's how you know
that allows the audience to know that it's funny and it's odd.
Oh, yuck, but fuck it,
we could just put it in a whole world where everybody just does that. And then let the audience decide whether or not it's disgusting. I guess you could pre-fill the eggs with milk or something like that, or water.
No, you got to convince. And that way, everybody.
No. And then we got stripping with a magnifying glass.
I reckon I could design a special type of straw that is specifically for sucking eggs. I can picture it right now exactly what it would look like and where it would have to have holes and plugs and that sort of thing for this to work as an idea. And then I would like to take this concept onto like a Dragon's Den or something.
Trying to encourage them to
suck an egg with me.
To suck an egg, just try it.
Yeah.
You say, I've already sold a million of these.
Yeah.
I think Otis came up with a product.
Tell me.
It's a small mask for your nose.
Mm.
You know how sometimes you're out and about and you see people who it seems like their mask doesn't fit properly to cover their mouth and nose.
Second.
And so it's a small mask, tiny little mask that you can just put over your nose to solve that problem.
Really good idea. Can I just add this to my straw for sucking eggs
sure.
idea? This is now, I'm taking it into kind of like a vape or e-cig type territory. This is an egg cig, right? And you know how those have just a little battery that vaporizes the whatever it is? Well, my one has a little battery that cooks the egg as you suck it. So as the raw egg flows over the little cooking element, it gets
all hard
into a kind of a scramble, and then you suck hot cooked egg. So you crack an egg into the end, or you shove this thing through an egg, and then it's got a little heater element that as you suck it up, it's all curdling and cooking there in the thing.
It's incredible. Thanks. For some reason, that seems worse to me.
But I don't know why.
It's much more practical, though. But, you know, I guess for me, I just like the simplicity of it's just a guy or a gal and just a sharp, thin object.
Mm.
You know, do it with a pen. You could just go like that.
That's good.
Yeah. All right. Scoot, scoot, scoot. It's so good, good, good. It's so good, good, good. It's so good, good, good. And it's good, good, good. It's good, 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 good. It's really good.
Thank you so much for listening to In the Think Tank. Sorry, I went on a bit this week. You've been very good by listening to the show throughout the years. And that's why
throughout the years or year, or if this is your first episode,
one of the episodes,
you were really good at making it through this one.
Thank you for your continued support on Twitter. You can find me at Stupid Old Andy.
I'm at Alistair TB and we're at Toon Tank.
Yes. Check out Al's Twitter. He's been doing great stuff.
And check out Andy. He does great stuff. I don't think I'm any more special than anybody. Although I did post a sweet potato with a dick vein on it.
Like, it's crazy to me that I'd like only a couple of weeks before had a dick vein potato. That I was like, oh, I should tweet this. And as I was trying to take the photo, I was like, no, it literally just looks like I'm taking a photo of my dick and tweeting it. I don't feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
And then when
had a few people say to me, you know what, I had one of these and I wanted to post it, but then better judgment stepped in. And I got to say, that really helped me out. That really helped me out. The fact that it's not as common. You don't see it as often because of the fear of others.
Yeah. But you got a lot of retweets out of that. People obviously got
excited. Over 60. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so you can also support us on Patreon if you like. We just recently put up a really old sketch show of ours as a bonus thing from last month that is from like 2011 before we were even doing the podcast. And so that's for people who are on $8 and get all the other content that's in there. But that's also there to watch. Look, the quality is variable, but I think it's worth a try. You can review us if you like. And you know what? You can just go out and just have a really good life. I hope where you are, they're not. The virus is under control, and we
love you.
You. See ya.
Yeah.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.